Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon. Good afternoon. We have Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and major hockey news around the world as we do every Saturday between noon and 2. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors. A star, we got a lot of stars on today. Scott Cullen from TSN. He wrote a great Oilers offseason tee-up. We'll talk about that and more. Kent Simpson has enjoyed a bird's-eye view of the Edmonton Oil Kings and their playoff run. We'll talk about that and game number 3. Benjamin Massey will be by. Always funny and articulate. We'll talk soccer and Oilers. With Ben today, and Kent Wilson will talk Flames, Oilers, Canucks, offseason, and a few things happening right now in the hockey world. We'll have Jim Byers by from Oklahoma City, play-by-play guy, teeing up his game tonight, which you can listen to via the AHL site. We'll talk about that and more. First, though, it's Al Mitchell, along with my producer today is Mark Mageau. What happened to Connor? Did he miss the bus? Or
I'm not too sure where Connor is today, okay. But it's an honor to work with you, as always, sir.
Oh, honor?
Like, I told you, I skipped my college graduation. To work with you today.
What's up with that? I mean, is this a, like, there's girls and stuff? Or?
Well, I've learned more working with you and reading your blog than I did in 2 years of college.
You and I are going to have a long talk one day over a cup of coffee about priorities at your age.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Okay, we've got a couple of scores to pass along. Rangers and Washington tied at 2 apiece, about a minute and a half left in the second period. And the latest score I have in the World Hockey Championships is 3-3. The Americans are flying. That Canadian team is in tough against the Americans today. We'll keep you updated on that and more throughout the day. The big story in the city of Edmonton, and this is great to see. As an old-timey guy who remembers the Edmonton Oil Kings from, well, the 60s and 70s, and then the ice from the 90s, I believe, the Edmonton Oil Kings have caught the attention of the entire city of Edmonton, and hockey fans are going nuts. Big crowds for the first two home games of the final, electrifying hockey. These kids are really good on both sides, and it's the talk of the town, as it should be. Game one was a beauty for the home team. Game two, fairly close until, I think anyway, until the bottom dropped out with a 3-goal second period for Portland. That Berchi guy should be trading for him any day if you're the Oilers, because we're going to be watching him a lot down the QE2 here in the next 10 years or so. We shouldn't be too hard on the boys for last night. That Portland club is outstanding. Berchi's a great player. They've got a lot of depth. The shot that Berchi unleashed for his first goal last night, that was ridiculous. I think it made it 3-0. We'll talk to Kent Simpson about the Oil Kings, what's in store for game number 3 when they play on the road against Portland. And, of course, they're back here for game 5. And we've got some interesting items on the ticket prices. Is a great way to get in and watch game number 5 at Rexall. We'll tell you about that as the day goes by. Oilers have a few players, as always, at the World Hockey Championships. Jordan Eberle has a goal for Canada in game number 1, and the Nuge and Devin Dubnyk are also on Team Canada this year. Jeff Petrie has scored for Team USA in game number 1 as well. Aleš Hemský has one for the Czechs, and of course there are games on right now, and those numbers could be wrong because of the action today, but we'll keep you updated. Team Sweden did not keep Linus Omark, but did keep Fredrik Pettersson. Remember him? He was a draft from, I think, 2005, a depth draft for the Edmonton Oilers. And he ended up playing in the Swedish Elite League and doing very well. And he is in playing for Team Sweden this year, so you might be able to catch him on television. Ryan Murray, who will go high in the draft and is the first undrafted player at the World Hockey Championships for Canada in memory, played 17 minutes in game number 1, looked solid aside from a couple of wobbly moments. And we're going to talk to our guests about him today, along with some of the other guys at or near the top of the draft. Oklahoma City Barons play tonight against San Antonio. They are down 1-0 after blowing a lead, which rarely happens for the Barons, but they blew it on Thursday night. We'll talk to Jim Byers about that second period in which San Antonio scored 3 goals, and we'll do that later on in the show. We'll focus on one of the emerging talents in Oklahoma City, Tyler Pitlick, who played in Medicine Hat, also in the NCAA, and this is his third league in 3 years, and it took him a while, but he's coming on. No word from the Edmonton Oilers at all on a lot of different things. Coach Tom Rennie's future, nothing official on Steve Tambellini, but it sure looks like he's going to be getting that 2 or 3 year deal based on what we're seeing and the fact that he went to the lottery. I have a feeling we might see something happen here after the World Hockey Championships, because you're leading up to the draft and there's only a certain amount of time. The word we got, the scouts were looking at all the top end prospects. They took the trip to California to put together their list, and we'll talk about that today as well. It's gonna be a tough year. This is not the Taylor versus Tyler. This is Nail versus the world. at this year's draft. Going to be an interesting, just to see how this wears out, because it seems to me as though we start with a list, and Bob McKenzie, of course, is the guru of this, but it does get tweaked as we get closer to the draft, and the combine has a lot to do with that as well. So, and this year, there's so many injuries. Yakupov, Galchenyuk, Grigorenko, really everybody. Morgan Riley looked fabulous for Moose Jaw once he played, but he didn't play for most of the season. So as a scout, I don't know how one of the great scouts that the Oilers have would be able to figure this out. And it's good that they've got number one, and maybe not so good too, because if you make a mistake, you're the guy who did it, right? So Rennie will find out about here sometime in the next few weeks. It's kind of interesting that things are happening in San Jose. Todd McClellan did not get a lot of support at the postseason press conferences, and that could be an indicator. And we've heard rumors that the Oilers are interested in Todd McClellan should he shake loose. So lots to talk about today. We'll keep you updated on these scores as best we can. We begin the show today by saying hello to Scott Cullen from TSN. Scott, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great. How are you today?
Very well. Lots to talk about. Let's start with the fact that these NHL playoffs are going nothing like we thought they would. Somebody asked me to pick my opening round winners. I was 4 out of 4, and I could go 0 for 4 in the second round. This is crazy.
Yeah, I think what it speaks to is that there isn't a huge gap between the best teams and the worst teams, and certainly the worst teams that make the playoffs, right? So you're talking the best teams and the 15th, 16th ranked teams. There just isn't a huge gap, and it's such a small gap that a team that gets better goaltending over a short period of time, or that can make the difference, and it certainly did in several first round series, and I think that is maybe a function of the way the league is going to be from now on, is that you're not going to find a massive difference between the teams at the top and the teams in the middle.
Even a slight change, is something as slight as the Nashville situation, it seemed to put them off their game a little bit. Is there any way that, number one, Nashville can come back in that series, and number two, if they do lose the series, is there any way this will not be painted as the Russian and the Belarusian causing the Nashville team to maybe lose focus a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think that they're going to be the convenient scapegoats if they don't make the comeback, and I suppose probably putting too much on them for what they actually did, but at the same time, they kind of opened themselves up to the criticism by doing that and getting caught out of missing curfew. But I think what's the tough spot for the Predators is that they played most of the year without those two guys, without Kustis and without Radulov, and they were a good team. And so I understand the rationale behind you suspend them and still expect that you can win. And they did so in game 3, but then to come back in game 4 and still leave them out, you're leaving yourself, this is where you leave yourself open to more criticism, because everybody understood the reason why you sat them out for game 3. But now to sit them out for game 4, you're saying, all right, our leading scorers in the playoffs are still going to stay out of our lineup. And then when you get shut out, that comes back to bite you. So I think that this is the Predators have spent a long time under Barry Trotz and backing his methods, and I don't expect that's going to change anytime soon. But I think how this playoff series finishes is going to have some reflection on whether that's the right way or the wrong way for the Predators franchise to go.
The Canadians, by the way, tied to score at 4-4 late in the third period. Have you had a chance to watch Team Canada, the World Hockey Championships, and what's your impression of them and that impressive American team as well?
I have only caught a tiny little bit so far of the World Championships, but I always kind of like the roster that ends up over there. I mean, I know it's not Canada's best team, but it's a lot of good young guys that are still trying to kind of prove themselves and establish themselves at a certain level in the NHL. I mean, they're all guys who are NHLers, but you have a chance to go over there and play with other good players and come back to the NHL and assert yourself as definitely a scoring forward or whatever, and someone that your team can lean on a little more than you might have otherwise. And so I think it's always interesting to see who shines when they're over there. And as I heard you mentioning before, Ryan Murray is obviously one of the more interesting ones to watch, for sure.
In conversation with Scott Cullen from TSN, it's 10 minutes after noon, and we're Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors. I know it's officially the off-season for Oiler fans. When you write that Edmonton Oiler piece in your TSN column about the off-season, my hope, Scott, is one day I'd like you to write that in June, if you would, because I know you start at 30 and work backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the goal that I have, is that you know, we'll have this conversation one year in June. It's an interesting piece, though, and I like how you break it down with the efficiencies and, you know, who did well and who is a free agent and what they might want to look for. And I think you brought up some interesting things for Oiler fans, and so it's very timely that we're talking about it. What should Oiler fans look for in terms of improvement this summer? Is it mostly defense, or do you think they have needs elsewhere?
Well, I think there are needs elsewhere, but I think the glaring need is on defense, and I'm not sure that the Oilers' defense is quite as bad as it's been painted. I know pretty much everybody seems to think that, well, there's no point in them taking Nail Yakupov at the top, that they, you know, trade down, get a defenseman, you know, trade for another defenseman, do whatever you can to bolster the blue line. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily the path they have to take, because I do think there are some guys who, are part of the future on that Oilers defense. I mean, I think Ladislav Schmid has made nice progress over the years, and I thought Jeff Petrie had a really nice year last year. Those are a couple that are certainly going to be kind of cornerstone pieces going forward. And, you know, what you get out of the veterans, I'm sure, is going to be the real determining factor next year. And, you know, Ryan Whitney, whether he can stay healthy, or Andy Sutton, whether he can not be suspended, and Nick Schultz, you know, is he going to be a steadying influence? If any of these guys, come back and have good years next year, that the Oilers' defense isn't necessarily disastrous. At the same time, it is an area where that they can upgrade, and I think, whether they use their first-round pick on it or not, it's still something that they can choose to address this summer, because say they decide that they're going to pick Yakupov or whoever else at the top of the draft, they have other assets that they can move if need be. There are enough young prospects in the Oilers system that they can afford to move one if it's going to help upgrade their blue line.
When they won the lottery, Steve Tambellini and then later in the next week, Kevin Lowe both talked about the possibility of trading the pick and suggested that they'd have to be overwhelmed in order to move it, because you obviously, you know, can pick the guy you want. However, there's a lot of interesting teams like the Habs and the Islanders and even Columbus and Toronto at number five. Do you think there's a possibility that pick gets moved, at least to move down two or three spots?
Well, and I think it's possible, because if you subscribe to the idea that the Oilers have enough up front, that, I mean, they've certainly done well in the draft in recent years, getting high-end talent up front. So if you subscribe to that, the idea that they're going to be okay in terms of scoring, that, you know, and that their real need is to get a defenseman, and, you know, depending on what the price is paid to move down, say, from 1-4 or 1-5, 1-6, whatever team is anxious to move up and take, and presumably it's Yakupov that they would trade up to take. But, you know, you never know what you might be able to extract from them in order to make that move. And if you do make that move, there's still going to be a quality defenseman available, you know, in the 4, 5, 6 spot, because the top 10 is kind of overrun by defensemen this year. It's the way the draft class is looking, you know, there aren't a ton of high-end scorers. It's going to be a lot more guys on the blue line. And if the Oilers want to, really change the look of their defense, you know, maybe the trade down is a way to do it.
We hear at every draft that teams should take the best player available, and certainly the Oilers, you know, have done that. You could definitely say in 08 getting Eberle, and obviously in 10 with Hall, and then the Nuge, they've done a good job. But at some point in time, even if you do agree that taking the best player available is the right thing, don't you sometimes, if you take three or four in a row that are forwards, you run a little danger of becoming like the French in World War II, where you've got all your cannons pointed in one direction and nobody's there to stop the ground forces from coming in. Is that maybe something that would reach a tipping point this summer for the Oilers? They passed on Larson. They passed on some very fine defensemen in 09 to take Pajärvi. At some point, is it defensible, do you think, for the Oilers to go ahead and take that defenseman, even if it is number one overall?
Well, that's a tough call. I mean, I would say no. I would say you take Yakupov, and if you're going to stay at number one, and then look to address your defense elsewhere, and particularly because it's not easy to just insert a young defenseman into the lineup. I mean, a guy like Larson, who had a fine rookie season, ended up being a healthy scratch for a couple weeks down the stretch, and early in the playoffs. And, he's been capable. He certainly stepped in and played just fine for the Devils when they finally put him back in. But, it's not exactly smooth sailing when you drop an 18-year-old on the blue line and say, go ahead and make this team better. So in some ways, I understand the way some teams work is that they almost avoid drafting defensemen that high in the draft because it usually takes a few years before they're really ready to make an impact. And, you'd rather get your impact. I mean, if you can get a forward there, he can probably make an impact fairly quickly. I mean, I think the Oilers fans have certainly seen that. Nugent Hopkins and Hall it takes them weeks before they're suddenly impact players in the NHL. So I think I don't know that it's a tipping point this year that they absolutely have to take a defenseman, but I think if they're going to decide that it's a defenseman, I think the smart move is to trade down to do it and acquire other assets in the package.
Tom Rennie is still hanging out there without a contract, and I think Oilers fans are maybe along with the organization wondering about who might shake loose this summer. Some interesting things happening this week with Todd McClellan and in Vancouver with Alain Vigneault, but although I think that the idea that Vigneault is going to go anywhere aside from Vancouver is somewhat ridiculous. Do you think there's going to be a lot of movement among coaches as well as obviously players this summer? Is this a year where a lot of teams might end up changing the lead man?
I think you could see a few teams doing that, and then obviously the McClellan situation does seem to sort of hang out there because San Jose, gives a nice vote of confidence to Doug Wilson, and there was no ensuing paragraph talking about that Tom McClellan is on such sturdy footing himself, and so yeah, I can see that and McClellan certainly because of the Sharks have played pretty well over the last few years and experienced some success, if not ultimate success in the postseason, that you can see that he would be an attractive candidate for several teams, Oilers included. So and it with the Oilers kind of leaving Rennie hanging right now, it seems quite obvious that they're hoping to find a better option out there, and that this could be an opportunity to make a change that you don't really have to. You don't have to sacrifice anything off your roster. This is just a way to kind of change the direction of the club. And it works for some teams, and doing it in the off season this year is probably not the worst idea.
Scott, thanks so much for this. We appreciate it very much.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
All right. Scott Cullen from TSN. If you don't read his column, make sure you do. And he writes so many of them that I think it's on page 2 of his byline that the Oiler item comes up, and it's really good stuff. The great thing I like about what Scott does is that he's not a he does all 30 teams, so he just puts it out there and really talks very frankly about what the needs are, what might happen, and he has all the elements there, and it's a really nice starting point for the summer. And there's so many things that could happen for the Edmonton Oilers this summer, so really nice insight from Scott Cullen at TSN, so we recommend that to you. Now, we got a busy show, so I don't want to take too long here teeing up the next item. We've got Corey Graham on the way. We're going to talk about the Edmonton Oil Kings, their loss last night, their tremendous run in the playoffs, and what Oil King fans can look forward to for Game 3 and then back again for Game 5. We'll take a break. We're back next. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.